So to Iran now, nuclear showmanship, a shadow war with Israel, use of the oil weapon, all were in play yesterday on the international stage by Iran. Iran publicly demonstrating its increasingly advanced nuclear program by installing fuel rods in a reactor in Tehran, very publicly. It very publicly denied any involvement, though, in a series of bombings this week, apparently targeting Israeli diplomats from Tbilisi in Georgia to New Delhi to Bangkok, in retaliation for attacks on Iranian scientists that Iran says Israel is behind. Israel denies any involvement there. And this week, Iran says it will no longer sell oil to some European countries, preparing additional sanctions against Iran, a statement which caused oil prices to spike around the world, oil trading at about $119 a barrel at this hour. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad sounding almost to be taunting the West in this statement this week.
You see the propaganda used against us, and I have tried to prevent the Iranian people from developing his technology, and they issued a number of resolutions, political sanctions, but they haven't succeeded in their aim.
So what is going on in Iran? There's a domestic political angle here, and there's an international political angle. Sometimes they conflict, sometimes they're right in parallel. Joining me to discuss all of this is Stephen Kinzer, once again, journalist and professor of international relations at Boston University, right here in the studios of WGBH, where I am this morning. Stephen, good morning.
Good to be with you.
Also with us, and we welcome back to the program, is Kelly Niknejad, editor of Tehran Bureau, the website on Iranian politics. It's a partnership with the PBS Frontline. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So to both of you, what's more important here, the domestic political angle in Iran or the international face of projecting that, yes, we are a nuclear power? Kelly?
I think from the Iranian perspective, the domestic politics is more important, but I think the increasing international pressures as well, and I think both of them coupled together are very significant. So,
If we talk about domestic politics in Iran, Stephen Kinzer, that's a slightly narrow issue because the fate of Ahmadinejad, the president, is not necessarily the political direction of, say, for instance, the clergy and the religious authorities in Iran. Is this Ahmadinejad trying to save himself?
Certainly, Iran has a political system that's very fractured and very divided. It actually reminds me of what's going on in Washington now. You've got the mullahs on one side, you've got parliament, you've got Ahmadinejad. They're all fighting each other. Everyone wants to undercut the other.
You're not going to talk about contraception here, are you?
I think Iran might be a little further ahead than the United States on that one.
We'll leave that right there.
But I do think that there is a series of factors in Iran that will show you that there are groups there that feel hostility to the United States is an absolute fundamental basis of the Islamic Revolution. They can't give that up. On the other hand, they're trying to balance that against the need to try to find some way to counter this intensifying pressure. What's happened in Iran is that, as in Washington, there are very powerful groups that don't want normalization between Tehran and Washington. Within that reality, it's difficult to find some modus vivendi, and that's what's leading to this frenzied spiral that we're seeing in the United States now.
Powerful groups against an accommodation with the United States, but huge sort of demographic changes in Iran, which want some sort of normalization with the rest of the world. Kelly, how does that play?
Absolutely. It's very significant, actually. It's, in fact, because Iran is having its first election since the 2009 election on March 2nd, why I think a lot of this is coming to the surface right now, because, the head of the Revolutionary Guards, the lead military force in Iran, is on record as saying that the post-2000 election crisis was more significant than the Iran-Iraq war. And this is going to be the first, poll again since that time. So they're very concerned about it. And if there's a time to get any concessions on Iran is at a time when, they had just called for, more protests on the 14th of February. The election is coming up. There's the question of legitimacy, whether there's going to be anyone who's going to show up to vote again. There's the increasing sanctions. The inflation is going to probably kick in a few months. And, there's all the pressure and the rhetoric from Iraq and, of course, the assassination of their scientists not far away from the intelligence ministry. So, yes.
Referring to that shadow war with Israel,
yes,
that I alluded to at the beginning. Stephen?
I'd just like to add one thing that really becomes clear to anyone that travels to Iran, as I do periodically, and that is that the population of Iran is amazingly pro-American. I'm going to go on record and say, unless somebody can contradict me, it's the most pro-American population of any country in the world. It's an astonishing thing
to stand on a street corner. I've had that experience, too.
I agree.
You find people coming up to you and saying, as one woman said to me, "We know they say terrible things about us over there, but we love America so much." You don't even get that in Canada.
This is not Pakistan, is really an important point here. It may be a rival of the U.S., there may be political tension, but in terms of cultural connections, it really belies all of the tension on the surface, this sort of sense within Iran of trying to reach out to the West. Kelly, why doesn't that make more of an impact on Iranian domestic politics?
Because those in power are acting like it's still 1979, 1980. They're still going by that playbook. That's how they handled the protests. And there is a huge disconnect between what has happened since the revolution, and a lot of these kids were born after the revolution. They came of age when they don't remember what things were like.
So in a sense, it's an exact mirroring of what the Republicans do, constantly evoking Reagan, which we should remember was a moment when the U.S. confronted Iran in 1980. Of course, the Carter election, the hostage situation back in 1980, the Iranian Revolution, the Republicans looking back to Reagan, and indeed here in Iran, the Iranians looking back to Khomeini. Stephen, you had a comment?
From a larger standpoint, this pro-American sentiment in Iran is a huge strategic asset for the United States going forward. We don't have many populations in the Middle East that like us. Anything we do to liquidate that huge strategic asset is bad for us in the long run.
Then why no influence? Why no influence on the nukes? Why do they proceed on this? Kelly?
I mean, I think this is the big dilemma in Iran, is that the leaders are not willing to concede that there has been this flood change and there is this pro-Americanism. I think they look at it as a threat, not as an asset. During the reformist, the short-lived reformist era, when they did allow some openness, there was such. It's taken them all this time to try to kill off the reformists.
March 2nd, certainly looming to be a very, very important election moment. Kelly Nicknajad, editor of Tehran Bureau, Stephen Kinzer, journalist, professor of international relations at Boston University. When we come back, we'll talk about American politics in Iran. That'll be fascinating. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Continuing now with our discussion about the situation in Iran, Stephen Kinzer, journalist and commentator, professor of international relations at Boston University, and Kelly Nicknajad, editor of Tehran Bureau. It's a website on Iranian politics in partnership with Frontline, right here from our studios at WGBH, a partner station in Boston, where I am for the last couple of days. So, Kelly and Stephen, what's the likelihood that Iran will be a significant player in the U.S. election, as this brinkmanship regarding the nuclear program in Iran seems to be ramping up? Kelly?
Iran is an easy target, so, the candidates can score very easy points by saying, Iran is a bad guy, look what they're doing, and, so it's going. I think it's going to be huge. It's an easy way to score points.
Do you think the political sort of rhetoric on Iran has changed much since the 70s in the United States, and should it change more?
It's changed just in a bad sense, that it's gotten more intense. We now see both political parties, plus Israel, plus the American press, joining to whip the American people into this artificial frenzy, portraying a wildly exaggerated view of a greatly imminent threat from Iran that's going to wind up destroying Israel, the rest of the Middle East, and the United States.
So Iran with nukes, no threat to you? No concern of yours?
We are not near that. According to Israel, Iran has been 1 year away from having a nuclear bomb every year for the last 10 years. We are seeing from nuclear scientists great skepticism about where they are now in their nuclear program. I believe that the United States should have a red line and try to do whatever we can to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. On the other hand, Iran is surrounded by four countries that are nuclear armed: Israel, Pakistan, India, Russia. in the long run, I think the world has to accept there are going to be more nuclear armed powers, and we need to deal with that reality. It's not going to work to take the biggest country that's right in the middle of the Middle East and continue a policy of hectoring them and denouncing them and sanctioning them and pushing them into a corner and expect that this is going to produce stability in the world's most unstable region.
Kelly Nicknajad, Ahmadinejad puts a fuel rod in a new reactor in Tehran. Is that a reckless move, or is that a statement of, look, we're joining this community?
It's expected. It's a time to show force because of all of the tension against it. If Iran is going to do anything behind the scenes, it's going to come out publicly and say it's not going to do anything that shows it's losing face. So even if we're at this moment negotiating, that's the kind of thing they would do in public. Like, no, we're going forward. We're not backing down. You're not going to make us look weak or stupid.
Quick question before we go. If Obama wins a second term, do you anticipate normalized relations with Iran over the next 4 years, Kelly?
I think President Obama would be in a better position to do what he needs to do without worrying about what everyone's going to say about him being too weak on Iran.
Stephen Kinzer, will he?
Whether he really wants to do that is another thing. We have seen that actually his foreign policy has fit very much into traditional patterns, and whether he'd be willing to break away from that in a second term is pure speculation.
Pure speculation at this point. Stephen Kinzer, journalist and commentator, professor of international relations at Boston University, and Kelly Nicknajad, editor of Tehran Bureau, a website in partnership with Frontline. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.